The condensation on the sterling silver tea service is a map of cold, precise circles. The tray is heavy. A wedding gift from a cousin I haven't spoken to in 6 months, and the weight of it in my hands is the only thing anchoring me to the floor of the morning room. The clock on the mantel, a French porcelain piece that survived two world wars and my first husband's estate sale, ticks with a dry mechanical cough. It is 10:14 a.m. On the mahogany sideboard sits a small pale blue envelope. It is an invitation to a charity luncheon at the club, a world I once anchored, a world that now feels as distant as a dream of flight. Beside it, my phone rests face down. The screen is dark. It hasn't buzzed with a transaction alert in 3 days. The silence in the house is a physical presence, a thick velvet throat that swallows the sound of the wind against the panes. I married Elias because he was the only person who didn't look at me like a grieving checkbook. When Arthur died, the lawyers circled like vultures, picking at the carcass of the estate with their billable hours and their necessary restructurings. Elias was the one who pulled the chair out for me. He was the one who told me that a woman of my stature shouldn't have to spend her afternoons squinting at spreadsheets and debating the tax implications of a municipal bond. "Let me carry the heavy things, Clara," he'd said, his voice a low, resonant cello. "You've spent 20 years being Arthur's CFO. Spend the next 20 being my wife." It was an exquisite seduction. It wasn't about sex, though that was its own kind of choreographed grace. It was about the seduction of being cared for. He took the stressors and folded them away like linens. He met with the executors. He streamlined the portfolios. He moved into the house and filled the hollow, echoing rooms with the scent of expensive tobacco and the quiet confidence of a man who knows exactly where the load-bearing walls are. I am standing by the window now, watching the gardener trim the boxwoods. I want to go to the village. I want to sit in the corner of the bakery, buy a double espresso and a croissant, and read a physical newspaper. I want the mundane friction of a commercial exchange. I pick up my purse. It is a structured black leather bag that feels lighter than it should. I reach for my wallet. Inside, the slots where my titanium and black cards used to sit are empty. In their place is a single sleek debit card in Elias's name. A household account, he called it. A way to ensure that all our spending is harmonized for the new trust structure. I feel a faint, pulsing heat behind my eyes. It isn't anger. It's the dizzying sensation of a floor tile coming loose under my heel. I hear his footsteps on the stairs. They are measured, rhythmic, and entirely devoid of hurry. Elias doesn't run. He arrives. He enters the morning room, wearing a cream-colored knit sweater that makes his skin look like polished teak. He smiles, and for a second, the sun catches the gold band on his finger. My father's ring, which he'd had resized to fit his broader hand. "You're dressed for the outdoors," he says. It isn't a question. It's an observation of a variable he hadn't accounted for in the day's schedule. "I thought I'd run into town," I say. I keep my voice level. I am a woman who once managed a $300 million merger. I do not tremble. "I need some air, Elias, and a coffee that I didn't make myself." He walks over to the tea tray and touches the side of the pot. "It's gone cold, Clara. You've been standing here for a while." "I was thinking." "Thinking is dangerous when you're restless," he says softly. He moves closer, his presence displacing the air in the small room. He reaches into his pocket and produces his phone. "I noticed an attempt to use the legacy account this morning, the one for the Hampton property maintenance." I stiffen. "I tried to pay the florist, Elias. It was $100. The card was declined." He sighs, a sound of profound fatherly patience. "We discussed this, darling. That account is being audited for the transition into the new trust. Any activity right now triggers a freeze. It's for your protection. The lawyers are very specific about the purity of the assets during this phase." "It's my money, Elias. It was Arthur's, and then it was mine. It's been pure for a decade. It's our legacy now," he corrects gently. He doesn't raise his voice. He never does. "And part of being a gentleman, Clara, is ensuring my wife never has to deal with the indignity of a financial audit. I've handled it, but I need you to cooperate. When you go out and trigger these flags, you're making my job twice as hard. He reaches into his wallet and pulls out a $50 bill. He places it on the mahogany sideboard, right next to the invitation I can no longer afford to accept. The bill looks small against the dark wood. "For your coffee," he says. "And perhaps something for the gardener's birthday. Be back by 1? I've asked the caterers to drop off those samples for the gala. I need your eye for the presentation." The exit mirage appears then. It is a sudden, sharp clarity. I could take the $50, walk to the garage, get into my car, and drive. I could drive until the gas runs out. I could call my brother. I could call the lawyers Elias replaced. I could reclaim the stress he so graciously took from me. I look at the $50 bill. I look at his hand, resting casually on the back of my chair. "Elias," I say, my voice a ghost of its former self, "I want my login credentials for the primary portal. I want to see the balances." The smile doesn't leave his face, but his eyes turn to glass. "Clara, we've had such a peaceful month. Why would you want to go back into the trenches? You told me you were drowning. I pulled you out. Do you really want to go back under the water? I want to know where the floor is." "I am the floor," he says. It isn't a boast. It's a statement of structural fact. "I've spent the last 80 days untangling the mess Arthur left behind. If you step back into it now, you'll see things that will break your heart. Debts you didn't know about. Liaisons you weren't supposed to find. I am protecting your memory of him as much as I am protecting the coins in the bank." He leans in, his breath warm against my ear. "Do you trust me, Clara? The secret hunger is a jagged thing. It isn't greed. It's the terror of being alone with the truth of Arthur's life. Elias knows this. He found the gaps in the estate, the small, messy inconsistencies Arthur left behind. And he used them to build a wall between me and my own history. He made himself the filter through which reality passes. If I push him away, the wall collapses, and I am left with the ruins of a 20-year marriage and a pile of legal fees I no longer have the liquid assets to pay. I am a wealthy widow with a silver tea service and a $50 allowance. The failure point arrives with the sound of the garage door opening. It's the grocery delivery. Elias handles that too. He selects the produce. He chooses the vintage. He ensures the pantry is a curated reflection of his tastes, which have slowly, imperceptibly, become mine. I reach out and take the $50. The paper is crisp. It feels like a bribe. It feels like a leash. 1 o'clock, I say. "There's my girl," he whispers. He kisses my cheek, a dry, proprietary press of lips. "Get the dark roast. It suits your mood today." I walk to the hallway. I put on my coat, a Burberry trench that cost more than the car the gardener drives. I check my reflection in the gilded mirror by the door. I look like a woman of substance. I look like someone who is in control. I reach the front door and turn the handle. It's unlocked. Elias doesn't need to lock the doors. He has locked the air. I walk down the driveway. The gravel crunches under my heels, a sharp, rhythmic sound that reminds me of teeth grinding. I get into the car. I start the engine. The dashboard lights up, showing me the range, 340 miles. I could go. I pull out of the driveway and stop at the end of the lane. To the left is the highway. To the right is the village. I look at the fuel gauge. I think about the debts Elias mentioned. I think about the audit. I think about the look on the bank teller's face if I walked in and tried to prove who I am without a single piece of paper to back it up. Elias has the passports. Elias has the deeds. Elias has the heavy things. I turn right. I drive to the bakery. I park in my usual spot. I walk inside, the bell above the door chiming with a cheerful, mocking brightness. The scent of yeast and sugar is overwhelming. "The usual, Mrs. Vance," the girl behind the counter asks. She's young, her hair tied back in a messy knot, her life a chaotic sprawl of shifts and rent and freedom. Yes, I say. A double espresso. To go. She rings it up. That'll be $6.50. I open my purse. I take out the $50 bill Elias gave me. I hand it to her. My hand is perfectly steady. Keep the change, I say. The girl's eyes widen. Oh, Mrs. Vance, that's too much. I can't keep it, I repeat. My voice is hard now. A relic of the woman who used to negotiate mergers. I don't want the change. I don't want to carry it. I take the paper cup. The heat of it seeps through the cardboard sleeve, stinging my palm. I walk back to the car and sit in the driver's seat. I don't drink the coffee. I just hold it. I watch the clock on the dashboard. 10:42 a.m. I have 2 hours and 18 minutes of air left. I wonder if this is how Arthur felt. If he was trapped in his own complexity, waiting for someone to come along and take the weight of the world off his shoulders. Or if he was the one who designed the cage, and Elias simply moved in and changed the locks. I look at the coffee cup. It's a cheap disposable thing. In an hour, it will be empty and cold. I will throw it in a bin, and I will drive back to the house. I will sit in the morning room and look at the caterer's samples. I will let Elias tell me which hors d'oeuvre reflect our shared vision. I realize, with a dull echoing thud in my chest, that I am no longer Clara Vance, the widow of Arthur Vance. I am a line item in Elias's portfolio. I am a high-yield asset with a manageable overhead. I put the car in gear. I don't look at the highway. I don't look at the horizon. I look at the rearview mirror, making sure I don't hit the curb as I turn back toward the estate. The espresso is bitter. It's exactly what I asked for. It's the only thing I've bought for myself in a month. And as I swallow the last drop, I realize it's the most expensive coffee I've ever had. It cost me the rest of my life. I pull into the driveway. The gates swing open automatically. They recognize the car. They recognize the owner. Elias is standing on the porch, checking his watch. He looks up and smiles. He waves, a graceful sweeping motion of his arm. I park the car. I check my makeup in the mirror. I look perfect. I look cared for. I step out of the car and walk toward him, the heavy gold chain of my inheritance clinking invisibly around my neck. How was the coffee, darling? He asks, taking my hand and leading me inside. It was perfect, Elias, I say. It was exactly what I deserved. The door closes. The deadbolt doesn't make a sound. It doesn't have to.